Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. On this week's show, we'll be talking about conditions for the blind in Southeast Asia and India.
We'll continue our conversation from last week with Caro Caron and Victor Tsaran. We'll learn about their travels throughout Southeast Asia and India, where they trained blind people and their instructors, and also about the conditions for the blind that they found there. And towards the end of this week's program, we'll learn about an app they developed for the iOS called Plantiful for healthy cooking. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Caro Caron.
I keep those stories in the background, you know, because I always think if those people were able to overcome difficulties and lead a joyful and cheerful life, then we can all learn from them and do the same.
And as this show progresses, you'll be hearing some of these stories that she refers to of blind people in remote villages who really didn't have such great conditions. And I think we can all learn from these stories of people who managed to be happy in spite of what looks like a pretty unattractive situation.
And just as a reminder, in last week's show, we talked about Caro's podcast, which is a wonderful podcast where she talks with people about their trials and tribulations and how they got where they were to get to happy places. And the podcast is called
Joycast.
Very nice.
That wasn't our regular breaker tune,
but it was very nice.
It was beautiful. It's called The Fog, written and performed by Victor. So turning now to our low-tech item, we'll reintroduce Victor and Caro from last week. And we promise this will be pretty quick, but if you want to learn more about them, listen to last week's show, which is number 1335.
Before we reintroduce Vic and Caro, just let me remind you that in last week's episode, we learned that Vic grew up in Ukraine and was totally blind, and Caro grew up in Poland and is partially sighted.
So I know, Victor, you've been on the show several times before, but never together with Caro. Can you start by introducing yourselves?
My name is Victor Tsaran. Professionally, I work for PayPal as an accessibility program manager, so I lead their accessibility team. And not professionally, I guess I do all kinds of things, read books and play guitar.
My name is Caro Caron, and I am a holistic life coach and an author. As a holistic life coach, I want people to have a healthy lifestyle, but then I also obviously want them to choose the best path of growth in their lives. And as an author, I published a novel a couple of years ago.
No, I've actually bought the novel, but can you tell everybody else what it's called?
Sure. It's called Breaking the Silence, A Story in Paintings. It's about the censorship of gay relationships and the arts in the communist Poland, so right after World War II.
And I met Vic when I started working with him on the JSONAR scripts, which are scripts that are written for JAWS to be used with the audio music production program Sonar.
And we did an entire show on JSONAR featuring Victor, and that was number 1151. And we also interviewed him as part of our programs about the CSUN conference, and that would be shows 1211 and 1212. And we also talked to him in a pair of shows about social media, that's 1240 and 1241.
And we don't expect people to write all that down quickly and capture all that information. So we actually put all this information, shows, notes, and contact information in a file associated with the show, our show notes. So if you go to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net, we have a number of resources there, including the show notes, ways you can subscribe to the podcast, subscribe to our email listener forum, etc.
are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is Caro and Victor's travels around the world and the conditions for blind people they found in the places they visited. Their story begins shortly after graduating from college, which they attended in the United States.
We wanted to stay in the States because we liked it here, and then started searching for a job, but there was nothing to be found at that point. And in the meantime, our good friend in 1999, he called us up and he said something about, oh, guys, you know, whenever, if you have a chance, if you're interested, you know, I'm looking for someone to help me out with these local training courses in those different countries of Asia. And of course, you know, we were all eager to try something new. So sure, that would be kind of cool to go and try something out like that. So we went to Thailand for the first time, and then, you know, we did all kinds of stuff, and it seemed to have been working out. So then our friend Larry Campbell, who sent us to teach that first course in Thailand, and he kept sending us to Cambodia and Vietnam. Throughout the years, we had a chance to come back to Thailand and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
so
Philippines. And then,
Philippines. Yeah. And, you know, mostly these courses were either about teaching kids how to use the computer, not just kids, but adults as well.
Later on, it was more about teaching the teachers, like how to, I think one was like using arts in the classroom. So that was definitely more for teachers. There was a course also we were teaching together, breaking sociocultural taboos. That was my part, and leadership was Victor's part. That course was taught at International Institute for Social Entrepreneurs in Kerala, in India. Basically, the premise of that one was that you cannot become a leader unless you break the taboos from your own culture or society. So that was the most recent one.
But the interesting thing, you know, traveling in those countries obviously gave us an interesting perspective on those cultures. I mean, first of all, I've never traveled to Asia before, neither did Caro. And so going to Thailand, it was really such an amazingly new and different experience from all angles. To begin with, the languages are so different. The Thai language isn't similar to anything that we spoke or heard, you know, in our lives. So that was number one. Number two, you know, Thai people, they're not very good with English language. In many countries, it's changing now because young people obviously realize they need to know English. But back then, we had to dumb down our English so that we could actually...
Yeah, it was like, I go sleep, you know, something like that, just so that they can understand us.
So we could communicate. And it was really quite interesting because in many ways, it became really an interesting intercultural language exchange experience.
And I suppose it's even more difficult if you're trying to teach these to blind people. You can't even use hand gestures or point to things.
Exactly.
Right, exactly. So the very first course I was doing on at some point in Thailand, the Thai Association for the Blind decided that one of the ways they could employ blind people is if they taught them some system administration skills on Linux. So if they could teach them some of those skills, perhaps they were hoping these guys would become employable. And so they invited us to teach that course. And it was actually interesting because, you know, Linux, as you can imagine, I mean, it's a pretty, especially back in 2000, it was a very geeky, I mean, it's still pretty geeky, but not as much.
It takes a while to learn and become familiar and comfortable with it.
Right. So now imagine teaching that to people who don't speak a word of English, and the operating system itself relies heavily on the English language, right? All of the commands, all of the manuals that you read, everything you do in Linux was in English back then. So actually, they did have to hire a translator, and I don't know what this guy had to do, but I'm sure there was probably some translation magic going on if he was able to communicate half of what I said. But they supposedly liked it, so I don't know. I guess it worked.
So it sounds like you guys did quite a number of these trips. I'm wondering how long each of these lasted, and what was the organization that sponsored the trips?
So it really depended on the trip. Sometimes they lasted, you know, a month and a half, and sometimes 2 weeks. It just depended how many countries we were expected to visit.
There was a program called Overbrook Nippon Network on Educational Technology, something like that. And Overbrook, as you already know, this came up before, right? So this is the same school, and they partnered with Nippon Foundation. Nippon Foundation is a big foundation in Japan, and they sponsor a lot of social efforts like this. And so Overbrook, together with Nippon, were running this program. And as I mentioned before, the goal of this program was to set up these local train-the-trainers programs, basically.
Are these programs still in existence, or are a lot of these countries handling assistive technologies and visually impaired folks better on their own?
I think now it's more regional. So they are in existence, but I think they are now run by people that are local, you know, so like somebody from Vietnam or the Philippines. Some of them are the people that we used to know. So that's really nice. Thankfully, now there are knowledgeable people there in the area, so there's no need for us to go there anymore. And, you know, they're probably much more like up to date with everything.
Well, it sounds like it was very fun and rewarding experiences.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there's probably a lot you could write and talk about it. You know, one of the cool things that happened to us, and I think it was really, really useful, is the fact that for the most part, we actually lived not in hotels, but we lived in either some student hostels. So we actually lived close to where we would teach. So that gave us even more exposure to the local culture, to people. First of all, people didn't treat us like, oh, those guys came from Europe to teach us something. But at a certain stage, we basically just became friends, you know, because we would spend with them every day. So it really felt like an immersive experience.
So in the course of doing all of these different training programs, you wound up living in a number of countries. Can you comment a little bit about the different conditions for people in the various countries who were blind?
Well, I think the first issue is there are lots of stereotypes about people who are blind. Surprise, surprise. And the biggest one is that it's believed that blind people cannot do things on their own. And so oftentimes when you go to villages, you'll find parents keeping their blind children inside the house, basically so that they don't injure themselves. That was one explanation. And also because, you know, it was shameful to have a child who is handicapped or disabled in any way. So that was a big issue. I mean, especially in the Philippines, I remember that they had social workers who would go to villages and they would be literally, you know, asking kids in the village, do you know of any blind child? Perhaps you've heard a story, blah, blah, blah. And they would, you know, it was quite an amazing effort to find any child who needed help. So that was the Philippines. I don't think it's such a big problem in Thailand. They have an association for the blind that's in existence for quite a while now. And, you know, they have campaigns like, for example, they even were teaching flight attendants from Thai Airways how to help people who are blind on the flights. So I think that they're just a bit further along the way. So it definitely differed from country to country.
Yeah, so the other big thing is that lots of people become blind not because of accidents. You know, in the West, I believe the statistics say something like most people who become blind is usually a result of an accident, you know, there may be some diseases or something. But in general, I think it's usually not so many people are born or have medical conditions compared to people who end up in accidents. But actually in Asia and Africa, it's the other way around. A lot of people become blind because they don't get sufficient medical care, or sometimes what Caro said about parents being a little ashamed, because of that, they never go and see the local doctor, or they never tell anybody they have a blind child. And so because they don't get the proper treatment as a result of, you know.
Right. By the time the child is discovered, let's say he or she is 9 years old, and believe it or not, there are cases where they had to teach the child how to walk because the child was in bed all the time, basically, so that, you know, he doesn't or she doesn't injure themselves. So yeah, they really had to start from scratch.
So yeah, in their case, if you look for blindness organizations who are working in those regions, you will find a lot of the work goes into blindness prevention as opposed to, well, of course, there's obviously employment opportunities and teaching and things like that. But blindness prevention is probably one of the biggest efforts that's undergoing in any of those countries because, surprising probably for many people from the West, but it is very true in those countries that a lot of kids just don't get proper treatment for their eyes, and as a result, they lose sight. But, you know, of course, there are usual problems. You know, the poorer the country, the fewer resources they have. There's lack of equipment. Obviously, there's lack of even basic things like canes. There's lack of braille books, for example. There's lack of teachers who even know how to teach blind children. So all these.
And, you know, and it's a bit more complex. I mean, I don't want to pick on Philippines because obviously once the children were found, you know, the social workers have done an amazing job. You know, usually they would help them as much as they can locally, and then they would encourage the kids to either go to local schools or and get some teacher support, or otherwise the kids would come to Manila, you know, which is the capital of the Philippines, you know, for some trainings. And so obviously, you know, it's a bit more complex than the picture I painted just in, you know, 1 or 2 minutes. Also, you know, what was really funny to me was like in Cambodia, for example, where, you know, we had like the latest equipment that just arrived and we were supposed to set it up for the Center for the Blind. And outside you see this dirt road. I mean, it wasn't even paved, I don't think. And so, you know, you just have huge contrasts between sometimes the technology that they have just gotten from somewhere and then just the daily living conditions, which are still in many cases very different from the West.
We sometimes forget in the U.S. here how fortunate we are in terms of the resources we have, both through the government and even some of the private organizations. And we have things like the National Library Service for the Blind, social organizations, and all kinds of help.
And in some of these other countries, what they have is an awful lot of determination and creativity that they're able to apply to the situation without all of those resources.
I think definitely we're pretty spoiled here with access to information. I have seen, though, some interesting things. What these guys can do with low resources is just as amazing. I remember in Vietnam, we've seen teachers were using rice to teach Braille to their kids. Sometimes our Braille display cost a lot of money, and obviously Braille is still pretty expensive, even here in the West. You know, it's not a cheap undertaking. But sometimes with low resources, you can do a lot of things without having to resort to high-cost technologies. I mean, you know, imagine like using rice to teach Braille. That's pretty kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
The hurdles to even make these things work, it just takes dedicated people over there and takes hours of planning and kind of thinking, well, what else can I do for that child to teach them this or that concept? But sometimes the ideas they come up with are just as amazing as the technology we have here.
Well, I like the idea of rice as an affordable, refreshable Braille display.
Well, yeah, that's probably taken a bit too far, but yeah.
You were in these various countries quite a few years ago. Do you think things have changed much since you were there?
Well, yeah, what's amazing is to watch how much has changed over the last 10 years, how many more people got access to technology. And that's not to say the problem is solved already, but it is certainly amazing with all the open source efforts like NVDA has been really quite instrumental, especially in those countries, to enable many blind kids to get access to education. Because, you know, now the organization, instead of buying a very expensive $1,000 JAWS screen reader or a very expensive laptop, you could get a netbook, you know, for $100, put NVDA on it, and you could send a student to school. It's really amazing to watch really how much has changed since we've been there, which is great.
Yeah,
I mean, it's been
absolutely
only 12 years, but it's amazing to see all the changes that have occurred there since then.
Have you been back to any of these areas more recently?
No, I think last time in Southeast Asia, I think we've been like 2006 or so. And then in India, I think was like 8 or 9. I think the dates are kind of blurry because we've done so many of those trips.
But we keep in touch with some of the students,
yeah.
You know, on Facebook, or, you know, we still keep in touch with Larry Campbell, the guy that I mentioned before, who sent us on the first trip and well, most of the trips ever since. So that's how we sort of know what's the latest in those countries.
Yeah, and you know, for me personally, it was very rewarding to go to all these countries and just get inspired by all the stories of people that we met there, you know, because many of them, and when we met them, they were super happy and cheerful. And then you find out their stories and they're quite horrific, you know, like being found by a social worker in a home or having the face burned by acid. You know, stories like that. And so, you know, for me personally, I mean, I think that really shaped me into who I am today, you know, which is a life coach, because I keep those stories in the background, you know, because I always think if those people were able to overcome difficulties and lead a joyful and cheerful life, then we can all learn from them and do the same.
How did you guys wind up in California after all these travels?
Yeah, most of these trips happened already after we graduated. We had one during our studies. Once we were done with studies, we couldn't find a job. And so that was actually a perfect fit because we lived in Poland after coming back from the States for about 2 years. And during that time, we were just traveling. While just living in Poland, we'll be traveling to those countries.
Then we've done some also from the US, right? We used to live in Arlington, Virginia for a while. And so we would also travel from there.
So basically what happened then, we decided that, you know, while these trips were great, it was really difficult to build any kind of sustainable life because you really didn't know when the next trip is going to come up. And, you know, these were relatively short trips, I would say. And so in between, we still couldn't find a job. So we decided we really needed to get a job, a real one, full time. And so that's how we, through our friend here in the States, we got a job in Arlington, Virginia. So that's why we moved back to the States. And then basically once we lived there in Arlington, Virginia, then I got a job with Yahoo here in California. That's how we ended up in California.
And you were a programmer and manager of accessibility at both Yahoo and PayPal, right?
Yeah.
If you'd like to hear about being blind in other parts of the world, we actually did a number of other episodes of Eyes on Success where we did talk about conditions in countries around the world.
And those include people we've interviewed about conditions in Egypt, Sub-Saharan Africa, along the Amazon in South America and Panama. And we'll have links to those shows in the show notes as well. Now, that also wasn't our usual breaker music, and that was also Victor playing something he wrote, but that clip was how he opened his presentation at the TEDx Silicon Valley conference in 2009, and that is available on YouTube, which you can either Google, or we'll have the direct link to that in our show notes. Now, for this week's high-tech item, an application that Caro and Victor developed for the iOS about healthy, delicious cooking. I understand you have a new venture that was also a joint effort. You've published a basically digital cookbook that's available for all of the Apple devices. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Pretty much, yes. So this is the app for now with 28 plant-based recipes that are gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free. So they are pretty simple as far as ingredients go, but, you know, they have lots of nice fresh ingredients. And, you know, so I don't think that people will find the dishes boring. It's just what I'm saying is that they're pretty healthy because they are free of all the stuff that I mentioned before.
Well, we're vegetarians and we've always eaten healthy food. And then I turned out to be lactose intolerant. So we were really happy to see this as a source of recipes. And we found out about this app about a week ago and we've already made 3 different recipes and they're delicious.
Super cool. That's great to hear. That means it was not a wasted effort.
Oh, I'll vouch for that. They were very good.
Well, so Victor tried all the recipes, actually, because the way it worked was that I created all the recipes in our kitchen, and then I would, you know, cook them, and then we would have them for dinner. I would take pictures before that, and then, I designed the app in HTML and CSS, and then Victor programmed it, basically.
And I gather you've got some little touches in there that are specifically geared to people who are using it with voiceover.
Oh, yes, that is true. Because during my PhD studies, I fell in love with this psychologist from Harvard called Howard Gardner. And so he's famous for his learning theory and like that different people have different learning styles. One person may be a visual learner, but another person may be a tactile learner, yet another person may be just a textual learner and so forth. And so I was thinking to myself, you know, describing pictures the way it's usually done, just giving people dry descriptions is not really helpful, because if somebody is totally blind, then how does it help them to know that in this particular picture there is eggplant or something? I don't know, it just doesn't substitute the image in my mind. So what I thought of doing was putting some funny comments that people can get to with voiceover only. So if you're sighted, you're not going to see them. It's almost like a compensation for not seeing the image. But at the same time, you know, it's not a regular description, but it's more just like a funny comment. Another fun part is that you kind of have to hunt for it like an Easter egg, because the comments are not for every picture. They're just for some pictures, because I wanted to have the funny comments in there. And so I figured if I cannot come up with something funny for every picture, so be it. You know, I'd rather make the comments interesting. But I hope to continue the tradition once I add more recipes.
And then for anybody who's found this interesting enough to want to find the app, what's it called?
It's called Plentiful. So it's Plantiful. Basically, you know, because it's based on plant-based diet.
And it's available on the iPhone now, but I understand you're thinking about doing an Android version?
Yes,
mm-hmm. Absolutely. So it's now available for iPhone and iPad. And yes, we are working on the Android version as we speak.
And you can find it in Apple's App Store, or you can look at our show notes for this show on our website at www.eyesonsuccess.net, and we will have the link to it. You can also get there from Caro's website, which is www.lifeinjoy.net, and look for Plantiful, and she's got a link to the Apple App Store with the app there. And if you want to find Victor's website, that's www.victortsaron.net. That's it for show number 1336. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about jamming over the internet.
Now that's a lot of fun. Imagine you're a musician sitting around and you'd like to be playing with some other musicians, but no one's available at the time. Well, we're going to talk with Andre Louis, who will tell us how to be able to jam with other musicians in real time over the internet with an application called Ninjam.
If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook at Eyes on Success and on Twitter at _EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.